Good morning, and welcome to the first of two, maybe three, we'll see, on the topic of Mekartos. I will also note, just I sent an email, but I want to make sure that people know, we have Yar Haikala on Monday morning. The topic is one which we discussed back in Elul, the topic of Taromes, and specifically, what are the penalties if somebody breaks a verbal agreement, depending on what the fallout of that breaking of the agreement is. If you're planning on being here for breakfast, and you are certainly invited, breakfast is 9:15, please do sign up so that we know to make sure we have bagels and tuna and all that good stuff for you. So if anyone is planning on it, if you could just comment to one of us after shir, assuming you didn't sign up already. Chanoch, you signed up. We have you. But if otherwise, if you're planning on being here, and we would love to have you, please do let us know. Okay. But our topic for this morning is Mekartos. Boy, is this a challenging sugya to read. And you look at it at first and you're like, well, that's easy. And then you start reading it. The more you read it, the more challenging it becomes. It's actually my first time using the Ezra likes to call the green monster over there, the Otsa Mefarshei Talmud. I had never used it before. I'm still not sure that it helped. Anything's worse. But nonetheless, we'll see. It's odd. This sugya is odd because if you've been learning the parak, you noticed that it doesn't fit. We're having a nice discussion about rentals and the rental that fails to perform or the rental that is damaged and all the things that Sammy talked about for the last few weeks. Certainly we're on that theme. And then out of nowhere we get Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan is going to talk to us about what happens if you sell someone an item and in some way your words conceal or mislead regarding the fact that there is a defect in the item. And the Otsa Mefarshei Talmud actually, in its piece on the sugya in footnote 27, quotes somebody called the Darchei David, who says what I just said. He just basically shrugs. He says, yeah, I don't know what this is doing here. I don't know why this is here. He doesn't give an answer. That's just it. So thank you, Otsar. But what I want to do today is to understand the Gemara itself as seen by the Rishonim, and then move on from there to actually move into practical questions of Mekartos. Things like, what qualifies as a defect? Is it about the buyer's personal needs? Is it about community standards? Can you issue a waiver? Is there a statute of limitations on claiming a defect? So, because once we're here, once we're discussing Mekartos, we should discuss Mekartos. But our initial shear for today is just understanding the Gemara. The basic principle comes out of a Gemara in Gittin Yudalad, which I brought you here in Source Aleph, by way of introduction to our discussion. Hanu Gunei Da'avid Chushbina Bahadei Adadi, a group of gardeners who made a deal with each other regarding splitting of proceeds. And Hash Chamesh Istri Zuze Gavichad Minayu, after they've divided everything up, one of them has an extra 5 coins. So Amrile, they said to him, Yavinu Niale Lamari Ara. They said, give it to the person who owns the land on which we've been working. Ba'abi Mariara, and they said it in front of the person who owned the land. So the Kanamine, and they all, it seems, did Kenyan, even though Kana is singular, there was a general agreement that this is what we're going to do, and they're now bound by it. Then this gardener who is supposed to hand over the 5 coins makes a new account himself, starts to recalculate, and lo and behold, he says, no, actually everything worked out, there was no extra money. So, Asla Kameda Rav Nachman, he comes to Rav Nachman. Amarle Ma'iyabed Lach. Rav Nachman says, "I'm sorry, you're out of luck. Hakanu Minach. Deal's a deal." Amarle Rava, to which Rava says, "No. Va'atu Haimika Amar Lo Yehivna. The gardener is not saying to you, I don't want to live up to my end of the bargain. I don't want to give it. Daleka Gaboika Amar. He's saying it was a mistake. The whole thing was founded on an error. It's not my fault." So Amar Le, in Kenyan Batos, which the response is, oh, okay, then you made your Kenyan based on a misunderstanding, v'chol Kenyan Batos Choser. And if you make a Kenyan based on a misunderstanding, then indeed it is reversed. And that's what's going to drive our discussion in the Gemara. So what I'd like to do is first do a simple read through the Gemara, trying to just read it straight and see where it goes. then ask some questions about the way this works, and then, after you've asked some questions about the way this works, ask some more questions about the language of the Gemara, which is what leads the Rishonim to their different points of view. So we start out with the Gemara, source base. This is it, the entire thing, six lines. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hamocher Par L'Chaverov Amar Lo, Parazu Nagchanesi, Nashchanesi, Ba'atanesi, Rabtanesi. You sell a cow to somebody else, and you say to him, this cow gores, this cow bites. The seller is saying, this cow kicks, this cow sprawls. V'haya b'mum echad, and in fact, it has a blemish. V'snafo or v'sunfo bein hamumin. And he, I'm going to translate snafo right now, like the word sniff, which we usually understand to mean something that is sort of attached to something else. He attached, he embedded this among the mumin. Hareze mekachtos. So that's a mekachtos. If he attached the mum among these, in other words, not all of them are really there. But the way it sounds right now, the way I read the Gemara at first, is he mentioned four mumen. One of them is real. The other ones are not. Harezem mekachtos. So that's fraud. You deluded the guy into agreeing to buy it, and therefore it's no good. The deal's no good. He can back out. Whereas, mumze umum acher, in the event that he mentioned only two blemishes, is the way it sounds. This one, we assume this one is the real one, right? That's why we're calling it this one. And some other one, einze mekachtos, then it's not mekachtos. If you were to pause there and not have the next, 53 minutes, what would be the difference between the first case and the second case? Why is it that in the first case, in the Reisha of Rabbi Yochanan, it is mekachtos, and in the Seifa it's not? So in the second case, in the Seifa? 50-50. So it's just about odds, in other words. Right? If you mention three false ones and one true one, then you're more... there's a greater deceit, or the other guy has less of a chance of figuring out what's going on than if you only mention two. I mean, that's a legitimate read of what we've said so far. We're going to pick it apart, but that's what it sounds like at this stage. Tanya Nami Hachi, then we get a Brisa. Yes?
In terms of odds, I mean... what are the odds that you see the first one being the one that it has, though?
What are the odds that you... say it again?
Meaning in the first case, there's still a chance that you'll see the one that it has first.
Yes, there is a possibility. It's just, three out of four. I mean, you could then argue, if you really believe this was about odds, you could argue that it matters if you say it as the first of the four versus if you say it as the third, right? And you start to look at the words and you realize it says snafo bein hamumin. It was among them. Maybe that only means he stuck it in the middle. And in fact, it wasn't the first. And maybe another way you could look at this, and I assume this is where you're going, is that what makes the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa, the first case and the second case, is not so much the number of Mumin as where it is in the line. Maybe the first case is specifically where you embedded the real one as number three, and therefore the guy had a chance to look at the list and say to himself, well, one's not there. Two's not there. Forget it. Whereas the second time, you mentioned it as the first one, he looks and he sees it. So maybe it's really about order. We'll see. I mean, I'm coming to that as part of my questions. But agree that this is a question.
The first one,
yeah.
There's so many things, it just...
Good. So Hanukkah anticipates a point that we're going to have to see. But indeed, maybe the issue is simply that you flooded him.
Yeah.
Right? You give him a package of food and it says on it may contain, right? And it lists like 40 different things, and at which point you just look at it and say, you know what? I'm just eating it. I'm hungry. Or you just look at it and say, forget it. Just walk away, because at this point, this is gross. I thought I was getting a cracker and it's got soy, milk, seafood, and ketchup, I don't know what. So that's Rabbi Yochanan. Then you get a Brisa, which we're really going to give short shrift to, but we should read it at least once this year. Tanya Nami Ahi, Brisa says, Hamocher Shivcha Lachabero. Instead of selling a para, you sold a Shivcha. Va'amarlo Shivcha Zu, Shotahi Nichbesi, Mishua Memesi. He says regarding the Shivcha, regarding this maid, that she is irrational, that she is Nichbesi, subject to seizures, that she is Mishua Memesi, that she is either depressed or in some way not sane. Va'ayabom Echad, and in fact, one of these is actually true. Usnafo bein ha-mumen, and again, embedded among the mumen, harezem mekachtos, This and another ains and mekachtos. It's the same case, except that we've changed. You know, the cow is now substituted. It's now a shifcha, and the types of mumin are changed also to reflect that. But that's really it. I will come back to this a little bit, but not a whole lot. Amar le Rav Acha, braid the Rav or Rav Ashi. So Rav Acha, son of Rav, says to Rav Ashi, "Hayu b'kol hamumin halalu mahu? What if it has all of the mumin? What does that mean?" All of which movement? I'm sorry?
All four
from the Reisha. Why did he wait till here? Why did Rav Acha wait until here, right? This is like pronoun without antecedent. So that explains why the Gemara would bring it after the Braisa. No, it's Rabbi Yochanan. Here's the Braisa supporting Rabbi Yochanan. And then Rav Acha Brei Derava is reported to us as asking this. That's fair. Okay, I'm going to clarify Rav Acha a little bit more a little bit later, maybe, and my question. But sorry, yes, he's speaking to Rav Ashi, which is later. True. So Amalei Rav Mordechai le Rav Ashi. Rav Mordechai says to Rav Ashi, "I'll tell you. Here's what we learned from Rava. Hayu b'kolam umen halalu ein ze mekachtos. If it has all of these blemishes, then it's not a mekachtos. Meaning, if it's got, to use Rabbi Yeris's read, right? If it has in fact all four, then it's not mekachtos." That's the way that he reads it. Parenthetically, one of the points that I'll make regarding the case of the shifcha, the Otzim Farshei Talmud notes it, but really anybody reading this, you know, asks this question. I saw the question on Mickey's face when I read it, which is, what exactly is the point of bringing this brisa? Right? What did you accomplish by bringing the brisa? And if you have the brisa, who needs Rabbi Yochanan? Right? Fundamentally, it's the same message, and we're not going to see anything to make us think otherwise. So the Otzar, in column Tafshin Chav Gimel, asks this question, and in the various forms in which you can ask it, right, and suggests, well, maybe you wouldn't have known Para from Shifcha, but he doesn't explain why. You know, what the difference is. He also suggests that maybe Rabbi Yochanan doesn't know about the Brisa. The problem with that is that Ravina Rav Ashi know about Rabbi Yochanan and know about the Brisa. So why do they bother with Rabbi Yochanan? You could have just given me the Brisa and been done with it. Not to mention, you have a Tosefta on Bava Basra, which has the Para as well. So why do you bring Rabbi Yochanan? Bring me the whole thing is very strange. Jeffrey.
What if the seller doesn't say anything?
What if the seller doesn't say anything? So that will become relevant when we get to the Ravid. It's a good question, we're just not quite there.
If you don't say both brises, you're not going to necessarily think they're the same thing.
If I don't say, meaning Rabbi Yochanan and the brisa,
I think a para and a shifcha are different.
In what way?
Well,
I mean, they're fundamentally different.
Yeah.
Yes, but in terms of as purchases go, why would you?
I'm saying that's why you can't learn that from each other, because they're not the same thing. If you only said one of them.
But what would have been your thought not... In other words, now let me say it differently. Okay. Would you expect that if I were selling not a para, but I was selling a donkey? Right? Or donkey, if you like. Would you see a distinction there?
No, because those are both animals.
So it's both animals.
An animal.
So what if I was selling a table? In other words, at some point you need to explain why you would have thought that this was different. You can make arguments like shifcha is more expensive than a para. You could make an argument based on the different mumin, although that's going to be hard. I'm going to come back a little bit to the question of which mumin are noticeable and which ones are not, but we're not going to spend a lot of time on it. Yeah.
Is shifcha like karka? Maybe I think karka is different.
That's subject to mekartos? I mean, that kind of difference? That would be very interesting. Everybody should get into the land business. You could just ask her. That's interesting. So you could have questioned her. But then, I mean, the bottom line is that you can make all sorts of arguments, but I'd like something source-based.
What about, I think the Sima Pumbavodim discussion might help.
Sorry?
I mean, the discussion of the idea that maybe we never have a problem with a shefcha because there's a kol. People assume that you would know about any blemishes.
Why would that be true?
Yeah, well, that's a Gemara. Simpon vado the vadim.
Yeah, but.
So again, maybe people have reputations. Animals have less so. and then I can go both ways.
Isn't the cow more physical?
Right, so that's what I was going to say, that I think that you can make the argument about some of them being, I mean, they're behavioral, fundamentally, but the idea that you could dissect the different movement is an interesting one. But I want to get to the case itself. Why would the seller list movement that aren't real?
False sense of security.
False sense of security meaning what?
I'm being honest, right? Like, I'm saying all
of them. You see, don't have those, will give you a false sense of security.
So in other words, so you're saying two different things, right? What Jerry is saying is that this is a marketing tactic, right? I'm going to mention a whole bunch of Moomin. He is going to look at it and say, wow, he thinks that this is, you know, let's get away from cows, right? You're selling a car. And the you know, you sell the car, you tell the potential purchaser, yeah, you know, it shakes horribly on turns, it squeaks, it's slow to start, right? And then he does a test drive. He says, yeah, that doesn't bother me. I guess this, you know, this car really isn't as bad. He's just hypersensitive. That's one way to read it. Another way to read it is that he's protecting himself from liability later, like the allergen disclaimers. You know, this way, if anybody comes to me later on and says that there was a problem with it, I told you there was a problem with it. What do you mean? I listed that already. Don't complain to me that you had an allergy to such and such. We already put that on the label. So too here, where you'll list every possible defect in order to avoid a problem. The challenge with both of those...
Not the same.
Sorry?
It's made, contained.
Yes.
It does have.
Correct.
So the,
yes, there is a distinction to be drawn. That is correct.
There's another reason the seller does it. You think I'm so honest, and you're not going to look for another potential move that I didn't mention.
Right, the illusion of honesty. You will lie in order to demonstrate your honesty.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm not going to mention that Jeffrey's a lawyer. Yeah.
No, but if you come by my wife's me, he's got all these problems like he just mentioned, then, hey, I'm so honest that I don't worry about the car having anything else wrong.
Right, clearly this person is conscientious.
Yeah.
Yes, I hear you. Despite all of these, I feel like the Ritva's answer, or the Ritva's explanation, is much stronger. The wording that we're going to see used is that he says this, lahashbiach daito, or lahashbiach mekha, to improve, literally, his mindset, or his purchase. Take a look at the Ritva that I brought you in Gimel from the Shita Mekubetzes. Hayisi savur ki lahashbiach mekha omer. The buyer thinks that the seller is saying this lashbiach mekho sheshave hadamim afilu hayu bakalamu menahem. He says to him, you know what? This car squeaks and it shakes and all that, and yet I think this car is worth $10,000. That's, you know, that the it's sort of counterintuitive. You're going to list all the defects as a means of saying, look at what this car is. This is an amazing car. Even with all the problems, I'm still going to charge you that. I find the logic a little bit strange. However, I hear it. In other words, I hear the impact.
I don't find out those meanings, and I think, yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting a deal. Exactly.
Maybe I should pay you more.
Yes, because everybody in this deal is very conscientious and honest and above board. We have a seller who runs down his item, and we have a buyer who says, huh, this is great, I should pay him more for it. This is the ideal world. This is the Gan Eden of purchases. But that's that was one question. The other question worth noting is, why isn't this an Onah problem? Right? For those who were here, I think Jerry was here when we discussed Onah, right? So you sell someone something, and actually it turns out to be not worth what it was sold for. It's worth much less. He overcharged you because it has all these defects. So why isn't this just reversed under the laws of Onah? So again, the Otzer does feature this in footnote 48, and he suggests that maybe it's because our sugya just isn't dealing with Onah issues. In a Hanami, it could well be an Onah claim, but that's not our focus here. Our focus is Mekach Tavos.
There's no set price.
So generally there is.
For a used item.
For a used item. The who said this is used? It's a brand new para. Lo ala ala ol. It was we thought it was a paraduma, then it showed up with some black hair, and now it's just a regular para.
But it looks like these things are used. It's got all these problems.
Lav davka. That's what I think. Okay. But those are just general questions. What about this whole story doesn't work? So first of all, this business of Snafu or Sunfo, what he did with the moom, enlisting it, this is an odd word. I already rendered it as embedded. You could argue buried. Rav Haigon is quoted as saying some version of buried among the Mumin, but we're going to see the Ravid who's going to actually say Snafo means it wasn't included at all. He didn't mention the actual Mumin. That's going to take us back to the idea that was mentioned before, that maybe he didn't mention it, you know, what Jeffrey said. That's one. But number two, in your Reisha case, right, Rav Yochanan's first case, you sold the cow and you said to him, this cow has four blemishes, and you embedded one among the list. Was the real defect noticeable? Could he have seen it? What do you think? Just logically.
No.
He couldn't. No. What do you mean? Why do you say no?
I didn't see it, but I needed to understand. He didn't take it.
No, what I mean is, let's say, again, I'm going to go back to the car case, okay? You say to him, this car has the following defects, and you list that it squeaks, you list that it rattles, and then you say, in every 10,000 miles or so, you have to take it in because they have to deal with this particular problem. Happens to be, I took care of it 1,000 miles ago. Right? You list that among your defects. So there's no way that anybody could evaluate it. Is that the same as if all the defects are defects that, at least theoretically, are visible if you choose to look?
Well, isn't that the difference between the shift and the part?
What do you mean?
If she's prone to seizures, you're not going to be able to check that out.
You're not going to be able to check that out. And you can make the same argument regarding the cow, though. Right? Maybe it gores, but only on Tuesdays. No, like the Gorm Baba Kama. Right? Maybe. Only under certain circumstances, when people are dressed in certain clothing, then it gores. That's a question you have to ask here. If the real defect is noticeable, then why would it be Mekach Taos? Maybe as Hanoch said, because you flooded him with items on the list, right? There are just too many things there. Maybe because, as we suggested before, some of the named noticeable defects turned out not to be there. He looks at it and he says, I can see it's not this. And therefore I assume that the other thing isn't on there also, even though I could have looked and actually seen whether it's there or not. In the Seifa, when he says, Mum Zeh, Mum Acher, I assumed that meant, Mum Zeh is the real Mum, is the real defect, and there's also another Mum, right? Maybe. Does it have to be that? Could you flip it? It has this Mum, which I point out, and Mum Acher, which happens to be the one that ends up being the problem. Jerry.
Underlying thing here about that they're both larcenous, and because when he sees that it doesn't have this, and he doesn't say anything, isn't there a double larceny going on here?
Is that really larceny? If the customer fails to say, hey, I didn't notice it, it's not like you're paying the customer for a review.
In other words, he's working on a different track, and he's making, and as you said, he thinks he's getting a bargain. There's nobody's being fully open here.
Okay, there's the people that are at the buyer thinks that the owner thinks he has certain movement, but he really doesn't. So I'm really getting the better deal.
Interesting.
Well, the way that Regina presented it was that way.
Yeah. No, but the difference is that we're not talking about this right now, but there are certain expectations of sharing knowledge when you're dealing with somebody who has inferior information. Right? There are certain expectations. One of them is definitely not that the customer has to tell the boss about the nature, not the boss, the seller, about the nature of the seller's product. Meaning, there are certain classic cases. Right? I go to a yard sale, and I happen to be an art professor, and I recognize that the item that they're selling for $5 that's been hanging in their kitchen for X number of years is actually a Rembrandt. Because I'm an art professor, I have special knowledge. Do I have any obligation to tell them that this is a Rembrandt? That depends a lot on the conversation between them and me. If they say to me, you're an art professor, you pay me what you think it's worth, that's different from, they don't know me from anybody, I don't know them from anybody, and they just say, we want $5 for this. In other words, not every case in which you have special information are you required to inform the other party. It's really its own shear. I mean, if you want, I can give you a link to a shear I gave at Diaphans about this a while back. That's really its own discussion. The another piece that's going to be problematic and challenging in this is going to be the wording in the reisha. We said he told him four mumin, v'haya mum echad, and he had one mum. That's our edition. That's Rashi's edition. However, we are going to find that the Rif's edition is haya mum acher. It had a different mum. And what that means is something we're going to have to come back to. So all of these, the problem of Bain, the problem of Sanfo, the problem of Echad and Acher, Mum Zeh Mum Acher, like, means that we're going to have a lot of different ways to read this Gemara. We'll have to do detective work to try to figure it out. Not to mention the question of who Rav Acha is talking about when he asks his question. I want to stipulate one thing that I think is worth noting, which is, we're not punishing the seller here. This is not about punishing the seller. Within all of the Rishonim we're going to see, the only question is going to be whether the buyer knew what he was getting into or was mochel. And my evidence for this is in Source Dalit. Look at Rashi. Hareze mekachtos. When on the ratio, when we call it a mekachtos, Rashi says, Levisha hikir halokech b'sha'ar mumin she'enan, because the buyer noticed that the other mumin aren't there. Ukasavar hu bekulan mishakir, I added in the bracketed words, mishakir hamocher, right? He thinks that the seller is lying about all of them, that none of them are there. El lahashlich me'alav taromes hu omer, this is the other view of what the, why you would tell it. He's doing it to avoid liability later on. This way he's just going to mention all the possibilities. Hilkach mekachtozu. Therefore it's a mekachtoz, the adaita dahachi lozavin, because the mindset of the buyer was, I am getting X, and in fact he's getting Y. So because it's not about punishing the seller, or to put it differently, if the buyer had been cheated, not because of the seller's intent, but just because of something, he misunderstood something, it could still be a mekachtoz case, even though the seller was not doing this. And if the seller is a nasty guy who tries to fool the buyer, but it doesn't meet our standards for mekachtoz, then it won't be mekachtoz. It's not about the seller's behavior. Ditto in the Rif, which I brought you in source number 5. Look at his language. Hareze mekachtoz, why? Shu omer lo, k'shira'isi shen en ashkanis levtanis levatanis, amarti, k'shem shen elu mumin ba, kach zeamum ha'achar eno ba, l'shpich daiti omer li kach. The language is all about what the buyer is thinking. When I saw it didn't have these other mumin, I thought, okay, so it doesn't have this one too. It's all about the buyer's frame of mind. Ezer, it sounds like 75% of the time you're agreeing with me with that, and yet the way you're holding your head is that you have a problem with it. Which is it?
I mean, it's very nice. I mean, Rashi says it, but
I think the Rif also.
The Rif is just simply giving his logic, but I mean, you can't say that about all Rishonim. You could make the argument for
I couldn't find any. I could. Which one? Where did you see it?
No, based on logic.
Oh, based on logic, absolutely. The problem is that the rules as they play out, and the Rishonim that I do see, you know, stating what caused the Mekachtos, all frame it in terms, I wanted very much, like when I first started down this path, I wanted to see somebody say, we're zapping the seller for being a bad guy. Maybe the answer is what Alex said from the people of Harifta, which is, well, the buyer's no prince either. But I don't see it as expressing that.
Yeah, all this is based on you're saying that on the buyer's frame of mind. Right?
Yes.
So all these different features we're going to look at is based on the high above Mum Echad.
Yes.
But then you'll have to go through all these features again in case the Rif is correct when it's Acher and not Echad.
So wait and see.
Is it relevant that the Rif only mentions 3 cases and not 4?
I don't think so. I think he's saving ink. The last note before we get into the 3 schools of thought we're going to look at is one that everybody asks about and frankly should be its own shear. And I didn't find the time to try to break into this week. I doubt it's going to happen in this coming week either, but I want to at least give the ha'ara. The end of the Bach, I brought it here in number 6, in the Bach's discussion of this sugya. He's bothered by the same question that everybody should be bothered by when they read through this, which is, which of these movement is noticeable? And which of these movement is not? and the Rishonim themselves are not all on the same page. Uktzas kasha, the Harambam v'Rabbeinu, when he says Rabbeinu, he means the Tur. Korim mum nashchanis rabtzanis mumin she'en nikarin. They call the movement of biting and sprawling unnoticeable. Invisible mumin, presumably because they only do it under certain circumstances and you may not just be there the right day. But we're going to see the riv explicitly say that those are visible. Those are things that you can see. So he gives you this answer, which I'm not even going to read. You can look at it and tell me later whether you can make any sense of his answer. I don't understand his answer at all. I feel like the answer really is, and this is what I really have to go through with the different Rishonim to see if it's consistent. I think the answer is that there are three categories of movement and not two. I think what we really have are movement that are obvious, movement that are testable, and movement that are not testable. And I think that if you look through the Rishonim carefully, I think you can make it all work. I just didn't have the chance this week. It wasn't happening. Okay. So, how do we read our...
That's the same way in secular law.
Sorry?
That's the same thing in secular law, too.
Okay. Baruch Shekivnu. I'm glad they got it right. If they want to tackle the Gemara here, that would be good. So... three different approaches to how to read this. And if you take a look at the sheet for a moment, you'll see what I try to do here. Obviously, you see that first I give you one approach, that's Rashi / Nemuka Yosef. Second, I give you the Rif, the Rosh, and a few others. That's the second approach. Then the third approach is the Raivit / the Ritva, and it's also brought Rabbeinu Yohanan. Then, what does the Rambam do? And I brought you the Shulchan Aruch for good measure. And then I tried to help with a table at the bottom of the third side of cases, followed by on the back how each of our major approaches read the Gemara. That was what I added this morning that I felt is necessary. It's better than having review questions. So so hopefully with all of this, it'll at least be good for Chazara afterwards, if not during the Shir. The Shir may not be clear, but afterwards you have a chance to get it right. So, three schools of thought on what circumstances generate a mekachtos. The first approach is Rashi's approach, and again, we'll see the Nemuka Yosef fit into it as well, which is, it's a mekachtos if you tell a verifiable lie that misleads the consumer into thinking that the truth is also a lie, even if the truth could have been verified. So, in other words, I told him that my car's paint is rusty, and I also told him that the car rattles terribly. He looks at the car, he sees that it's not rusty at all, the paint's perfect, and he says, I don't need to take it for a test drive. Okay, now I only gave you two Moomin instead of before, so you'd have to add... right, to make it really parallel to our case. But you get the idea. I told you something that you could vet, and you chose to vet it. And you looked at it and said, yeah, that's fine. And so the lie that I told you, which you could have, I mean, sorry, the true mum that I told you, which you could have verified, you didn't bother with. You follow? That's the view of Rashi. The buyer did not investigate. The buyer did not say, I'm backing out of this, I'm walking away. The seller argues, you're mocho. I told you about it. You chose not to do anything about it. But that's your mechila. However, it's not so. Because he thought that he knew that the seller was lying. He wasn't being mocho. He thought it wasn't true. If he knew it was true, of course he wouldn't buy it. That's the way the Rashi and Nemuka Yosef read Rabbi Yochanan. Take a look at source Zion. I broke out Rashi's comments based on the different parts of Rav Yochanan and then Rav Acha. He says, in the Reisha, the case where you mentioned all of these different Mumin, and in fact one of them was really there, right? The Mum Echad. Harizem Mekachtos, Lefisha Hikir Alokeach B'Sha'ar Mumin. I added the words that are in brackets. The Lokeach recognized that the other Mumin mentioned by the seller, She'inan, that they're not there. Ukasavar Hubakulan Meshakir, and he thought he must be lying about all of them. That's the Reisha. Whereas mum ze umum acher in the sefer, which is not mekachtos, is because shapirish lo shem oso mum levado. He only told him that mum. I'm sorry, not only. He specified for him that mum specifically, meaning the mum ze is the mum that's in fact going to cause him to claim mekachtos. And he said, yeah, that mum is there. And it also has unspecified other mumen. So what that means is there was no verifiable lie. Right? He said there are mumen acherim. So when I look at his car and try to figure out whether I want the car or don't want the car, I don't see mumen, but you know, he just unspecified, right? The first one that he told me about actually is there. I didn't look at it. That's my bad. That's not his bad. There's no toast, but he named it. That's Rashi's read. The Nemuke Yosef has an altered read of the Seifa in source Ches. There's a mess in the Nemuke Yosef, because you got these brackets from the Maharam, which, not the Maharam Rotenberg, different Maharam. Honestly, I don't know why he did this, Nemuke Yosef. I was happy with Nemuke Yosef the way he was. But I overheard you having the same problem. Yes. No? Excellent. The Nemuke Yosef in Ches says Aval Amar Le Barishona Oso Mum Sheyeshba. Right, he told him the mum that was there. And then keep reading after the brackets. Kevin Shaosum Nikr Venira Laayin, since that mum is in fact visible, Ava Bisha Snafo im ha achirim, although he included it with the others sounds like he named other mumen, as opposed to Rashi, right? Rashi's take being he just said there are other mumen. It sounds to me in the Nemuke Yosef and it fits in general that he actually mentioned other mumen, and mum acher is plural. It's mumen acherim, really. It's other mumen, plural. Because it says acherim. Einze mekachtos, that's not mekachtos. The bottom line is, as far as the Nemuke Yosef is concerned, that you put the true and noticeable mum first on the list. In other words, go back to one of the points we made when we read the Gemara. The word bain is a big word. Right? That in the Resha, you did it bain. In the Seifa, you mentioned it first. Rashi doesn't seem to care as much about the bain. Nemuke Yosef cares about the bain. That's the way I understand what the Nemuke Yosef is doing here. And I'm leaving this Maharam. He tells you Nemuke Yosef agrees with Rashi that it's actually this mum and unspecified others. And then, as Rashi reads it, going back to Rashi, what is Rav Acha doing? As Rabbi Yeris said, Rav Acha is going back to the Resha. As Rashi reads it, Rav Acha is saying, "You're telling me it's a mekachtos in the event that you list all of the mumen." Nathaniel, can you just give Pesach that sheet? He should have a hard copy. The other one I sent out this morning. Oh, okay. Rav Acha is asking, in the Resha, you told me that where he embedded one among four, right, and it was noticeable. It's still a mekachtos because it was a noticeable lie in them. What if there's no lie? In other words, Rav Acha's question is what Chanuch wanted to say before. What if you just flooded him with information and it's all true? He listed a whole bunch of mumen that are all true. So, in other words, he says to me, I'm selling you this car. It squeaks, it rattles, it has rust, and it squeaks, rattles, rusts, and I don't know what, needs the oil changed at half the frequency of other cars. And he tells me, at twice the frequency of other cars, that's what I meant. So he listed all of these different things. And later on, I come and I complain to him and say, you know, there's rust. And he says, yeah. And I say, yeah, but you gave me too much information. I couldn't deal with all that information. So Rashi says, that's Rav Acha's question. The buyer only cares about one of them. And he says, you're just listing everything. You're throwing everything in there. Had I known, I wouldn't have bought it. my what's the rule? And the answer is, the answer that the Gemara gives is, ein ze mekachtos. Hang on one second. That doesn't qualify as mekachtos. You can't claim flood of information confused you. This is why our disclaimers are this long when you want to buy our software. We're going to throw everything at you, and it's your responsibility to read it. That's the way he reads it, and therefore Rashi says, as noted in that last line in Zion, that the word afilu doesn't belong. Meaning, Rav Acha's question is, on the line that says, it is a mekachtos, what if such and such? And her answer is, that's not mekachtos. Not even still it's not mekachtos, because the original line wasn't a non-mekachtos case. There's no reason to use the word afilu. It's not even still. It's just, in this circumstance, it's not a mekachtos. Jerry.
Rather than going with all these crazy examples, what is the conceptual reason for being chozer there, giving you the ability to be chozer there if it's mekachtos?
Right, so that's what I'm trying to give you.
So in regular law, there's a concept of you both have to be ad idem, okay? You both have to be on the same page. Yeah? In other words, that you have every right to feel that, and if you're not, and the vendor has not put you on the same page, you're thinking something else, then they're going to get lost. Simple.
Right.
Why are we?
Because it's not that simple. Because the question is, no, because you haven't defined the key part of that line, which is, how did the vendor get you off of the same page? That's what matters here. Rashi's statement to you, that's why I'm trying to structure it this way, is introducing each one based on the overall philosophy as opposed to the way it reads the Gemara and then fitting the Gemara into it. What Rashi is trying to tell you is, telling a verifiable lie to the consumer puts him off of the page because it makes him think that when you're telling the truth, when you identify the actual mum, that's also a lie. That's the idea. I'm only using the cases because I think it helps people who don't think philosophically if they can also have a practical case. But the philosophy of it is you put him off of the same page. Not based on his say-so, I wasn't on the same page. You have to have something objective. And the answer is, if you lie to him and he knows you're lying to him about some of the women, that throws him off in terms of the rest of them. We're about to find out where the riff is going to disagree. But I'm watching the clock on this, and this is not something that can endure, you know, being spread out over 2 weeks. So I'm gonna ask you to hold, Jeffrey, so I can show you the difference between this and the riff. The riff is gonna be easy. Even the Rambam isn't so hard. But we have to see the difference between Rashi and the riff. The riff's view is that telling a verifiable lie, start the same way. Telling a verifiable lie misleads the consumer, if the truth involves information that cannot be verified. If the truth involves information that cannot be verified. In Rashi's case, you could have verified it. For you to come forward and say, he threw me off when he lied to me, and so I didn't bother to check the rest of the line, the Rif says that's your problem. You got lazy. You can't claim that he threw you off just because he lied on a different item. However, if you had no way of verifying the actual mum, right? You verified all the things you could verify, then it's a mekachtos. Because what were you supposed to do? Number one, you couldn't have actually checked this thing out. But number two, you had reason to think that when he said it, he was lying because he lied on something else that you verified. You saw that it was a lie. That's the way the riff looks at it. There's a piece of it that's the same. But it's a fundamentally different way to look at it. Okay, I'm going to go back to my car example, because again, I think concrete examples help some of us. In the event that you sell me the car, and you list on it that it has rust problems, and you list on it that there's a problem that the oil leaks, right? So it turns out there is no rust. The guy looks at the car, he says, I don't see any rust whatsoever. So Rashi says, if I don't look at the oil, it's still a mekachtos. Even if I chose not to look at the oil, it's still a mekachtos. Why? Because once I can see that there's no rust, I assume that there's also no oil leak. The riff says no. Go look at the oil. You can't later come back and say, hey, it has an oil leak. Absolutely not. I like the riff's read. I have to be honest, just from a logical perspective. Whereas, in the event that he talked about the rust problem, and he said also that if you drive it for several thousand miles, you will eventually find such and such, the buyer is entitled to come back and say, I didn't think that was real because I had no means of driving it several thousand miles, and I already knew you were a liar regarding the rust. So therefore, I'm able to make this claim. Let's see how the riff does it. The way the riff reads the Gemara includes the fact that he believes that the word is not echad, mum echad, but mum acher, meaning a mum that is not like the other mumin on the list. And what makes this mum unique is that it's not visible. It's not noticeable. This is not like the Kfira error on the source sheet last week. This is an actual different girsa in the Gemara. I'm not in any way impugning you for the riff's problem. If you take a look at source test on the Resha, Parazulo Haisalo Rapsadis Lo Nashkanis Lo Baatanis Vehain Mumin Nikarin is the word that I added. I added the bracketed words. The cow is, he claimed it was, in fact, sprawl or bite or whatever, and it's not. And those are all noticeable. The riff is assuming those are noticeable. That goes back to the Bach about, you know, what which movement are noticeable or not. He clearly believes that they are. Aval haya bum acher she'eino nicker. But it had a mum acher, a different kind of mum, which was listed on there. But it's not something you could recognize. Umina hamochem elu amumen she'einon ba. And he listed it along with those mumen that actually don't apply. Even though he mentions it, it's a mekachtos. Why? Because the buyer says, kishera'isi she'ena nashchanis. I saw, and that's how you know that he believes these are visible. I saw, it's not a biter, it's not a sprawler, it's not a kicker. I said, oh, just like that. So to this, lashvich daiti, and so on. That's the way that the riff reads the resha. By implication, if the problematic mum, the claimed mum, was noticeable, as Rashi gave, it would not be a taos. The Gra, commenting on the riff, did I bring it? The Gra in source Yud says something which I don't really understand. He says, the riff v'rush pirshu, d'reisha shalo haya ba'echa mikol ha'mumen and his karen kan, v'haya bo mamacher she'eino nikar. That it had, it didn't have at least one of these mumen that is visible. It had some other one that's not visible, like his girsa in the Gemara. V'haya bo mum acher, v'ein nafkemina bazela girsa shalonu mum echad. And then he says, "V'gam elu amumen aniskarin kan ena nikarin." The mumen that are mentioned here are not visible. I don't understand. He said, "Kshara'isi." I don't know what to do with this gra. And frankly, the rush is the same way. I'm not going to read the rush out loud, but I brought it for you in Yud Gimel to show you. He says the same thing as the riff, and he also has him seeing that it's not there. So I don't know what to do with this gra. Okay.
Can I have a quick question?
Yes.
Is he mentioning the mum acher or no?
Yes. He mentions the mum acher. What makes it acher is just that it's not visible. As opposed to at least some of the mumen that he mentioned that are visible. Unless you're the gra, in which case I don't understand how you read the rest.
Is it possible that it's something that's not visible but testable?
So that comes back to what I had thought, that maybe there is this third category. I just haven't been able to trace it through everything, but that's my thinking, yes.
Right,
is that a way to deal with it?
Is that, yeah, if you stick your hand in its mouth and then it bites you, well then you'll know it's not chanes. Does that mean...
In a chanami, man, maybe sure easy means I test it. In a chanami, right. I understand what you're saying. In the Seifa, the riff says, go back to S. The Seifa, mum zeh umum acher, he flips Rashi's read. Rashi said, mum zeh umum acher meant the first mum is the one that the buyer is going to be annoyed about later. That's the claim mum. And then there's some other one. Riff says, no. Hera umum acher shu nikar v'nira le'inayim. He showed him another mum, which was visible. V'amar lo, and he said, parazu yeshba mum zeh, it has this mum. V'yeshba od mum ploni, and it has another one. V'lo haya, meaning the second one, I added the bracketed words, nira la'ayin, the second one is not visible, ain't a mekachtos, that's not a mekachtos. Sharei lo hitahu, we didn't trick him, he told him the truth. Meaning the one he identified is really there, and the one that he also said that's not visible is really there. Lo amalo, ala mumen shabah, he only mentioned actual mumen. But the one that the guy is claiming, the buyer is claiming, is the mumacher. Is the other one in the Rif's read. And again, the Grud does something that I don't understand. If you flip over to Yud, he has the Rif saying, Va'od Amar Ba, the end of the line in the Grud, Va'od Amar Ba Harbe Mumin She'ena Nikarin V'lo Hayuba. He also mentioned many Mumin. I don't understand. The Rif said this and this. I don't know what many Mumin, I don't know where many Mumin came from. Nonetheless, and he also says below Hayuba, the Gra says, and the Rif said explicitly no, he didn't lie at all, he told him only what was there. I wonder if the Gra's version of the Rif is just different from our version of the Rif. Rav Acha, as explained by the Bach according to the Rif, is not asking his question about the Reisha, he's asking his question about the Seifa, meaning where you said it had this Mum and the other Mum, right? Rav Acha asks, what if it has all of these mumen? What do you mean? Look at the Bach in Yud Aleph. Rav Acha is asking about the Seifa. Dilma, Abba Pisher Ahu Amum Shu Nikar. Even though he showed him the visible mum, Usnafo Bein Shara Mumen She'enani Kachen Nikar, he mixed it in with other mumen which are not visible. Mikomakom Imhayu Bakol Amumen Havi Mekachtos. Rav Acha asks, maybe if you did that, and all of those mumin exist, the visible one and the invisible, bein sheyeshna bein sheinu, all of them are all visible, are all real. The Matsyamar, he could argue, still, you've told me too many things, and I assumed you can't possibly believe that all of those mumin are there. So his question is, you already told me mumze umacher is not a megachtos. What if all those mumin really are there? Would it still afilu be a mekachtos? And the answer is yes. I mean, sorry, the answer is no. Sorry. Yes, it would not be a mekachtos. That's the way that he reads it. That's the way that the Bach explains the Rif reading Rav Acha. And that's why he keeps the afilu, obviously. This view is also seen in the Tosefta and Baba Basra. You can see it there, which has Acher in Yud Beis. It's also the view of the Rosh, and it's the first view brought in Rabbeinu Yonasan in the Shita Mekubetzes in Yud Dalet. I'm not reading any of them because I'd like to get through this today. The third approach is the easiest. That's the Ravid's approach. The Ravid says you are just... not you're allowed to, that's a bad word. A seller can get away with lying. And it will not be a problem of mekachtos. The only rule is, you must mention the actual mum. And then you're fine. No mekachtos claim as long as you mention the actual mum, even if the actual mum cannot be verified. Because the buyer could have backed out. Even if you'll say, well, it can't be investigated, okay, so he could have walked away. That's why he reads the Reisha of the Gemara. Look at this. This is fantastic. It's based on his unique understanding of usnafo, as not he included it and just embedded it, but he ignored it. It's not there. He buried it. Tezvav. Haya bo mum echad, sorry, usnafo ben amum en hayelu, perush, shalo his giro, as Jeffrey suggested before. He didn't mention it. Hareza mekachtos. That's mekachtos. Shalo tomar ho v'kibol avum en gedolim shiz girlo. Don't say that since you accepted the big mum, and I don't know why you assume they're big, that he mentioned, afilu his girlo, hamum
ha... What's this far?
Fine. Afilu his girlo, hamum ha'acher, kemoken, haya makablo. So he would have accepted this too. Right? You told me the car and you told me the door falls off. Right? The door falls off. The windshield wipers only work half the time. And it needs an oil change every 100 miles. Or kilometers. That's what you told me. And I said, look, I just need a car. I don't care. It's going to sit in my driveway. It needs to look good. So I'm buying the car. He didn't tell me, also, the seatbelt sometimes slip. You didn't tell me also that it creaks when it goes around turns. So the svara of the seller is to say, he accepted everything else, clearly he was going to be fine. No, you have to mention the mum. That's the idea. Then the Ravid adds a question. He adds an additional question here. The question is that only if the other mentioned the other mentioned Mumen are not noticeable, and therefore since you didn't mention the actual Mum, he thinks that this isn't there. He thinks it has no Mumen. Right? In other words, the other Mumen you mentioned are not noticeable, are not visible. And the answer that he gets is, yes, if the other Mumen are real and noticeable, then even if you omit the claim Mum, that's not Mekachtos. You follow that? He says, if the other Mumen that are mentioned are really there, and they are visible, then it's not mekachtos that you didn't mention this other one, because then his mechila really is a mechila. That he really is mochel everything. We don't have the Ravid's reread of the Seifa, but I believe he would go with Rashi that the problematic mum was the one that was named. And again, I brought you in here. The Ritva has the same thing as the Ravid in Tezayin, and the Rabbeinu Yonasan's second review, the Yesh Mefarshim, is also like the Ravid that I brought you in Yud Zayin. What about the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch? So I'm torn here about how to do this. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, and I'm going to leave you there the table and the other reads of the Gemara, not go through them here, because you can just go through them yourself. They're there just to show you the three different views. The Rambam, as explained by the Bach, who I am indebted to forever, because he was so much easier to read than the Gra. Granted, the last line in the Gra says the Bach is wrong. But it flows. The way that he reads it is this. The Rambam is basically siding with the Rif. The Rambam in Zayin, in Tezvav Zayin, in Source Yuches, says, you sold it, you listed visible Mumen and Mumen that are not visible, it didn't have some of the visible Mumen, the Nimtzaba Mum may osan she'ena nikar, one of the non-visible Mumen, right? Like the Rif said, not like Rashi. It wasn't testable. One of the non-visible Mumen turns out to be there. That's a Mekach Tos. That's like the Rif. Then I'm jumping to Halacha Tes, which is the Seifa. Haralo Amum Sheyesh Ba. He showed him the Mum that it has, and he said, this one is there, and Mumploni, and then you have in brackets the possibility of more Mumplonis. Even though the Mumen he mentioned were in fact visible, the Nimtzu Bakulan, and even all of them are there, Ein Ze Mekach Tos. That is not going to be called a Mekach Tos. The all there being is a side note I'll come back to. But he mentioned true Mumen, and he mentioned another Mum. It's not a Tos, even if the real Mum is among the non-noticeable ones. Like the Rif, not like Rashi. Rashi again says that it depends on whether the real Mum is noticeable or not noticeable. If it's not noticeable, then if it's not noticeable according to Rashi, still the fact that you mentioned, Rashi flipped the case, right? Rashi flipped the case. It was the first one that you pointed to that was noticeable. That was the real Mum. Okay. What the Rambam does though is strange. Because he intersperses Rav Acha in Ches, and then again in Tes. Meaning in Halacha Ches, after he gives you his Ketzad, you see it there, he brings you Rav Acha's question, what if it has all the Mumen? And then in Tes, he throws in what I underlined, V'nimtza Bakulan, which is Rav Acha, if it has all the Mumen. So the Bach says that Rav Acha was actually asking about the Reisha and the Seifa. He wanted to know, in the case where I embedded a Mum that you can't see, but that's really there, right? What if all the Mumen there really are there? Is that Mekachtos? Or do you say no, because he didn't mislead him at all? It's not his fault. And in the Seifa, where he pointed out a real visible Mumen, and then he listed other Mumen, or said there are other Mumen, but he listed other Mumen according to the Rif, and they're all there. What's the rule going to be? And in both cases, Ein Ze Mekachtos. It's not a Mekachtos. The Shulchan Aruch sides with this read of the Rambam, so that we jettison the Ravid, We jettison Rashi, and what we say is, the psak in the Shulchan Aruch, you can see it here, I brought it for you in Chaf Aleph, the psak is that in order for you to be, to reverse the deal, in order to claim that it was Mekachtos, what has to happen is, you tell a verifiable lie, so this consumer knows you're a liar, and the true information, the claim that he's going to make, is that he couldn't have verified at the time. So he went on the basis of, I assume he lied about this, he's probably lying about this, and there really is no such mum. You can see the table that I brought you, I tried to break out all of the cases, all eight possibilities here. The Reisha Seifa Ravacha within Rashi, Reisha Seifa and Ravacha within Rif, and then Ravid's Reisha and the Ravid's added case. I wasn't sure what Rashi would say about the Rif's Seifa. I think if I thought hard enough, he probably could. I just couldn't think of it. And then on the back, I gave you how to read the Gemara within Rashi, the Rif, the Rambam as explained by the Bach, that Ravach is talking about both issues, and the Ravid. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.